Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, Aramaic Friday, and it is January the 24th, 2014. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. And today is Dr. Dale Hoffman. This is with Dale Hoffman, Aramaic Fridays. First, let's welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. Wonderful to be here. This cold, chilly day. I don't know what's happening for you folks up in Lansing and Chicago, but last night when we got out of the van, it was 8 degrees here in Branson, which is just unheard of for this area of the country. Crazy weather. But anyway, it's weather. That's the way it is for today. And we're delighted to have this opportunity to share this time with you to look into this ancient Aramaic language that just delivers to us so many gifts that it's almost uncountable. And so we're delighted to be here with you. And Dale Allen Hoffman, whose website is www.daleallenhoffman.com, where you can sign up to receive ongoing emails with all kinds of information. Dale, seems like you're accelerating your placing of videos on YouTube and just lots of information for people to get a hold of from the Aramaic. Nice work, my friend.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually had and it wasn't a dry spell in any way last year. I just wasn't uploading or putting as much on YouTube. You know what's nice about YouTube now is that 5-6 years ago, I could only put 3 or 4 minute blips on, and people would go, God, just as soon as you got, you know, going, all of a sudden I had to, you know, end that video and I had to go to the next one. But now I can put up, you know, 45 minutes, an hour, or even longer. YouTube's been the best tool for me in terms of getting the message out, because it gets it out there in a way that sort of goes past any kind of blurbs or like bios or something written down. You know, the written word can be just a little challenging if you haven't noticed. So it's been great. And even in that way, some people will, it's just the way the human mind works, people will go to my YouTube channel and they just hear, you know, unless it's someone who's able to be fully present outside of all of their frames of reference, they just hear what they want to hear in some ways, and they'll be like, you know, I can't believe it, you said this. And I'm like, actually, that's not what I said. What I said was this. Well, that's what I just said. And I was like, no, actually, it's the exact opposite of what you just said. Oh, hold on. Well, you also said this. No, I didn't say that either, actually. What I said was this. It's funny how the mind works, isn't it?
Well, you know, it points up an interesting principle. All listening is internal. Everything we hear tells us more about the content of our own mind than the world we think we're looking at. And until we straighten that thing out, we don't see or hear anything that's happening in the world. We see and hear our mind's interpretation. And, you know, we've been tricked into believing that when the mind serves up a reality, that's what's actually happening out there, rather than being taught the truth that when the mind serves up a reality, that's what's happening in here. What's happening here may or may not accurately represent what's happening out there, but can never be what's happening out there. And the whole world has taught us that, well, I look out there. You don't look out there, right? I mean, it's crazy to think you look out there. Once you start to look into how the mind operates, we're always looking inside. And, of course, everything that shows up in our minds is autobiographical. And once one grasps the truth of listening to people's words, for instance, as you say, this person says, well, when you said this, well, now what you know is something about a reality in their minds as opposed to having any more information about what you actually said. It's just an interesting dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, and it's funny, too. You know, one of the things that was a huge shift for me, I do remember, and it didn't hit me actually immediately, even though I know you said it the first time I heard you, which was in 95. But when you talked about how projection isn't, the common idea is that we somehow project out, when in fact what we're doing is projecting almost onto a little mini movie screen on our mind, or should I say even almost like into a little from a like a film strip or a strip of film in our mind. And of course, it's not even something that we're projecting out there so much as we're it's being filtered through our own past experiences, what I call in my Lord's Prayer translation, our hidden past. And it gets filtered through that, and of course, what we feel is a what we think of is a direct experience of this person. When in fact, what we're getting is the carbon copy. It's the digital analog realization. And that one, I heard projection, and the projection was still even thinking that it was outside. It still was groundbreaking for me, but it was sometime. I don't even know if I even got that completely when I was at Heartland. I think it was actually after it, and finally, just one day, I was watching it. Actually, I'm not sure if it was a DVD. Or listening to something, and it was like, all right, hold the phone. What was that? You know, it's happening within. Even though, you know, it's funny. That small shift. And you know, that's kind of brings up another challenge of language too, because we're using sort of words, common words like reality or projection, and using them in ways that people almost in a lot of ways are exact opposite of the way people think. Like when people mention reality to me, my question usually is, well, what's reality? Just use that word, reality. And when you get them in touch with even the idea or the concept of actuality, it's a light bulb that pops. That's a pretty profound experience for me to be a part of. And I'm pretty sure you've probably had that at least once or twice in your experience too.
Absolutely, definitely, and for sure. So do you come to the show today with anything in particular on your mind?
Well, you know, I've had an interesting – I had a great weekend last weekend in Florida down at the Life Center with Marcus Bishop, and we had this amazing conversation, and I believe that the conversation happened – I think it was Saturday morning. We were just in his kitchen, and he started getting me sort of – thinking about some things that had been there for me that I hadn't necessarily thought of. And he was talking about what he calls orthodoxy. You know, we can call it fundamentalism. We can, you know, within mostly Christianity in this case, ultra-conservatism, ultra-right-wing, then you start pulling politics into it. But speaking of orthodoxy and how there's a lot of people that he feels, and I do too, he feels there's a lot of people that are may not necessarily feel trapped in orthodoxy, though they're feeling this like a deep, deep desire or hunger for something more, something that's more real, something that doesn't have so much of a facade to it. And what we started, you know, spent the rest of our weekend doing was how do we communicate to those who may basically be within a particular ideology or system, particularly of whatever Christianity has become today. I don't even know what Christianity means anymore. How do we communicate with them in such a way that may not feel as threatening for them, that we're able to kind of get in the back door, so to speak, and maybe like put out a program or like a series of something, some sort of creations that enables us to sort of slide the door open just slightly and put our hand through and say, don't believe everything I'm saying, but just come with me for a few moments. I think there may be a different way of looking at this. And I realize that and I've known this, you know, it's easy for me to sort of point and say, you know, there's the problem, and it's always, of course, out there. But if I could actually get into the realization that, of course, those problems are really within my experience, and being able to call a spade, being able to say, look, this is definitely off, but do it from a place of opening, a place of presence, a place of conscious, active, present love, rather than kind of maybe pulling some of my past orthodoxy experiences, which thankfully aren't too intense, without pulling them too deeply into it and just say, look, let's look at this very cleanly. What's happening here? How can we communicate to these people? He really feels, and I feel too, that there's a mass exodus that's about to happen. And I think it's really important that, you know, for those of us who are, I don't want to say in the know, but have access to some deeper research and things of that nature, I think it's great that we could put something together. And that's why I think Why Again is so important, because Why Again, why is this happening to me again? Not only the book, but the DVD. I talk about it constantly. I talked about it over the weekend in Florida, is that it's non-threatening, and it just says, look, this is the way it works. This is the way the system works. What do you think about that kind of thing? And then how do we work it? Here's how it works. How do we work it? And it really hits for a lot of people. So what he and I have been thinking of, how do we communicate to sort of what's a kind of an intro message or some sort of not restrained in any way, but what's a good sort of introductory way to get people to just even listen? Because a lot of times that's the issue. They won't even listen. Here's they again. It's that issue of don't question, don't ask, don't tell, don't ask, don't tell. That works, right? And just shut the whole system down, and that way I can stay within my ideology. But we really, I do feel that there's, and I know there's people that are sort of coming away, but we really feel like there's a true mass exodus that's in process. I feel that also, I see Pope Francis as a bit of a, almost like an earmark of that too, or should I say a milestone or a way station that's showing like, hey, it really is time. We've been talking about the future. We've been talking about the end of time and the end of the world and all these things and these great awakenings, when in fact those do not happen unless we can step up right now in this moment and be fully who we are outside of the bags of garbage that we've accumulated. So I'm excited about what the future holds for us in terms of doing that and sort of putting the guns down, not that we're necessarily using guns, but sort of putting down those belief systems that I may have and say, okay, look, I understand we're looking at this from completely different perspectives, two sides of the same coin. It's not that anyone is wrong, but maybe we can both investigate both sides here and, you know, show me your side, I'll show you my side, and let's see what comes out of this. So I'm really excited about it because it's something that I've thought about, but no one had sort of like put it right in front of my face the way Marcus did and said, hey, look at this, you know. It's pretty beautiful, actually.
Yeah, I think that as opposed to a mass exodus, it's a mass entrance into an understanding of truth, an understanding of what Yeshua was attempting to teach 2,000 years ago, instead of, for instance, Greek misinterpretations and misunderstandings. So, you know, I'd see it as people entering into, and we're getting to the point of critical mass where people are starting to just, they've got so many brain cells built for truth. It's been around, you know, I go back 45 years ago teaching this stuff and people looked at me like I was some kind of wacko. And today, rarely doesn't, you know, people might say, I don't agree with you, but rarely does anybody just flat out say, that's crazy. It'll be more like, well, I don't agree, but tell me more. What does that mean? Where are you going with this? So I see it as a really an entryway into a new level of understanding, which is the oldest level. And I remember I was doing a conference out in California, and the Archbishop of the Syrian Orthodox Church came, and they were talking. One of the people in the conference was talking about this new understanding, and I was presenting the Aramaic forgiveness process. And he kind of, you know, put his hand up and put a hold on the show. He's like, no, this isn't new understanding. This is the oldest understanding. This is what's been around and hidden away from people, because, of course, if you can hide the truth of how to heal from people, people don't heal. People who don't heal tend to be kind of stupid, tend to be kind of controllable. They make great slaves. Where Yeshua says, know the truth, you'll be free of all of that slavery. And people who simply, to me, the earmark of how you tell whether someone is working to enslave or working to create liberty in someone's life is, where are their words? Yeshua says the power of life and death is in your words. Obviously, liberty would be an accompaniment of life. And, you know, being bound and in servitude is an accompaniment of death. And so what are the words of life? The words of life are based in human life. You know, hold a newborn child. What's there? The awesome presence of love. All you have to do is know that somebody's using words based in hostility and fear, and you know that you're coming into a fraud. You're coming into something, a wolf in sheep's clothing, something pretending to be what it is not, pretending to be about the Creator, pretending to be about love. But you don't talk about love in terms of hostility and fear and get anywhere. It's like, you know, a reversal. So I see the people that are leaving in droves the hostility and fear-based teachings about Yeshua's work as entering into an understanding of the truth of, oh, this is how we get back to our true human lives, to the true presence of love. Oh, okay, I got it. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a beautiful aspect of it that I think that it was funny when Jeannie in the beginning said Dr. Dale, I was like, oh, that's, it was funny because I, at least in terms of with what I'm doing with translation, et cetera, I've done my best to stay outside of frames of, for lack of a better word, indoctrination, outside of theological schools, outside of predetermined frames of what I needed to study or didn't need it in terms of someone else's opinion. That made it real difficult a lot in a lot of ways because I would get around sort of more orthodox or more within the particular clique. I would get around those kinds of organizations, people, events, and they'd look at me like, yeah, well, you're just a hobbyist. Okay. But the beautiful thing is that couple of decades down the line, the hobbyist is me. You know what I'm saying? I'm fully Dale. I'm still fully Dale, and I'm able to approach something from any angle, not worrying about any kind of a sacred cow. I'll investigate anything. I'll lift up any stone. I'll flip over any rug. I'll dig until I find the thing that's the real thing, the real direct experience that feels right. And what's one of the realizations that I've seen over the years is that, of course, when you're within an orthodoxy of any kind, it doesn't matter if it's religious, it doesn't matter if it's got to do with economy, politics, Republican, Democrat, whatever it may be, the answers, or should I say that the education, and I don't want to use the word education, I don't know what else you know, but maybe the indoctrination within that system comes from within that system, and it's meant to keep the sheeple in. It's meant to not be questioned. You're not supposed to go out and do further research. Don't start reading books by guys like Timothy Freak or Acharya S. or someone like that, or don't watch the film Zeitgeist. Don't do any of that stuff. If you're within Orthodox Christianity, you know, if you're within Islam, don't question what you're being told. Just eat it and take it. If you're within Judaism, eat it and take it, whatever it may be. And that's the thing it's literally just falling away right now, and I see the beauty of that in that I'm able to just be present and hear someone's opinions, hear someone's perception, and not feel threatened because I've done so much of my inner work. If I do feel threatened, I realize, okay, this is something for me to look into. It really doesn't have anything to do with them in front of me except that they are potentially a beautiful, amazing catalyst for me to show me what's already inside of myself. And it's the beauty of it is that, when you can let go of the frame, forgive the frame, that all of a sudden you realize that you weren't necessarily so far from what you thought. Maybe you were somehow right in the middle of it in one way, and it just took the slightest bit of a perception shift, of course, from outside to inside, from another person, someone out there that somehow their death absolves you from having to do any inner processing as opposed to understanding that it's our own mask, our own ego, our own pain body, our own ape, hypocrite, that needs to fall. That's what needs to die. And in fact, it doesn't need to die because it's not real in the first place. So
what you're telling us, in effect, is you're totally and completely a heretic.
Of course. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that word.
And many people think that's some kind of a four-letter word. You know, it's a nasty word. But all the word means is, if somebody does the research, and you know, in many circles, to say that word is like, ooh, what a terrible thing. And all it means is somebody with choice.
In other
words,
exactly.
You're not going to be bound to.
Yeah.
You know,
heresy.
I mean, it's amazing how many people follow someone who lived 200, 300, 500 years ago. Someone who, if they met them on the street, would look at them and go, I wouldn't listen to that person in a million years. But somebody else told them through fear that this was a dogma that they had to believe, and their choice was gone. They could no longer be heretics.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. When I first saw that, you know, several years ago about, you know, the Greek heresies. Heresies, if you go up to a modern Greek speaker, they're going to tell you, well, it's someone who's against some sort of predetermined ideology, some kind of system, someone who's kind of outside of the system, when in fact it had nothing to do with that originally. In that original Koine Greek, it meant choice. Meant choice. Heresies was one who makes a choice. Wow, what a novel concept, imagine. So I tell people, I'm a card-carrying heretic. Make me a nice T-shirt that says heretic. You know, I'm proud to wear it because I know what it means. Proud is the word, but I feel great about it. Let's put it that way.
Right. Cool. Well, shall we check and see if we've got any callers? I think Jeannie said she had at least one hand up.
Sure. Sounds good.
Maybe say a quick hello to Dr. Tim before we do that. Is Dr. Tim with us? I'm sure he is. I would suspect he is.
He's on.
How do you be, young man? You got anything to share with us? Anything to share with Dale from the class the other night where you did the Beatitudes, played his Beatitudes?
Well, just hello, and it's great to be here.
I say hello a million times over. It's always great to talk with you.
And I think we've had lots of examples of what you were talking about earlier. When we show a video, and Michael is talking about the true nature of your being as the essence of love and coming from love, and then we turn off the video and have a discussion, and people say, well, he said I have to just lay down and let people abuse me.
Yeah.
And so we know what they're taking from it is coming from their brain cells, not from what was said on the screen. We had another one not too long ago where we showed one of Dale's talks, and at the end of it, Dale ends the talk with some form of the phrase, so the truth is, all there is the light, and you are that. And then we went and had a discussion, and people had heard him say, there's darkness, and there's evil, and you've got to fight against it, and there's a duality. And it was really a rich discussion because we got to go back to what Dale had actually said and help people do worksheets on what was coming up inside of them.
Hmm.
And then the thing that I had for Dale to do some talking on was something I took from one of his talks just the other day. You posted one on YouTube. And you said that faith means consciously acting from the rooted center of being. And I wonder
Absolutely.
If you could expound on that a little, because that's not the traditional definition of faith that I was raised on.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost exactly opposite. The word for faith in Aramaic is ha'iman uta, ha'iman uta. There's four different sounds there. If starting in reverse from the last sound, if you start with the sound ta, ta means being, it means attitude, it means perception, it means experience. It's also what genders the word feminine. What feminine is, feminine means experiential. In other words, my perception of a book would be feminine, an actual book, the book itself would be masculine in terms of language. My perception of words on a page would be feminine. The actual written physical words themselves would be masculine. When you hear ta, what that means is it's not a thing. It's not something. You can't have faith. You cannot have faith in something. You cannot give faith. You cannot show faith. In other words, you can only be faith. Being is what it means when you break it down. You go to the sound before that, it's the wa sound. Wa is a letter. It looks kind of, well, it's meant to be sort of like a mixture between a W and an O is the best I can say at wall, or in Hebrew they would say vav. It's closer to like an oo sound. And what that oo sound means is, if you want to put it literally, it means action. As an example, when Yeshua said faith without works is dead, the reason his listeners would have understood that in the first century is they would have went, oh, okay, it has the oo sound, the wall. What that means is that there's action in it. In other words, it's being acted on. So you've got a perception, attitude, state of experience that you're actually acting on, or from, I should say from. Now, the middle sound of ha-iman uta is the sound iman, which is an Egyptian word that means from this rooted earth center, is the literal meaning. Iman is, of course, the root of the word amen. It means from this rooted earth center. You could put that in so many different ways, sealed in faith and trust. You could say, as sure as this rooted fertile earth beneath my feet, everything I'm saying is as it is. Everything that I have said is sealed in faith and trust. There's so many ways to say it. Essentially, it means as sure as this rooted fertile ground earth beneath my feet. It also means cubit. Cubit's an interesting thing because one of the things I'll ask in my talks a lot is, how do you find the common thread between sealed in faith and trust, living from the rooted center of being, as sure as this earth beneath my feet, and cubit? And a lot of times people will throw all these different things out, but every once in a while someone will say, they're all absolute. They are all exactly as they say they are. A cubit is exactly a cubit. So every one of those is saying, this is absolutely rooted from the center of my being. In other words, this is something that's coming from my center, not from my stuff, you could say. And then the first sound is the sound haya. Haya or chaya, depending on your dialect, is the word energy. Haya is the word, when Yeshua said, I come to give you haya and give it abundantly, that word haya there would be life. If you use the word save, like someone needs to be, like, let's put it this way, save as in someone's in the water, they're drowning, you pull them out, you saved them. Or in the modern Orthodox sense, saved. It's the same word, chaya. Salvation, you know, we've got a word salvation that exists today in modern English that did not exist even 1.5 centuries ago. It's a very new word. People, I believe it's important that people know that in all these different cases, it's the same word, chaya, which means conscious life energy. So we have this salvation, save, all these different things. It means to preserve life, to be conscious of. So we've got conscious, rooted, center, action, and being. So how you actually would break that down is consciously acting from the rooted center of your being. In other words, you cannot have faith. You cannot possess faith. You cannot give faith. You can only be faith. Faith is you when you are coming from the center of your being, below all of your bushel baskets, coming from the light at the center of you. And I don't mean your physical center. I mean the place that pure, still, absolute place in the center of your feeling. You can feel it when you're present. Whole in this present moment. When you're coming from that, that's what faith meant. And that's why when you see someone, all these different, that's where you see the beauty of America. People talk about America as a melting pot. I like to see it as a salad where all of these different characters or these different, the tone, the timbre of each individual point of consciousness, person, etc., is maintained so that it's community without conformity, so that each of us can be who we are. Faith is Bob Dylan. Faith is Elvis Presley. Faith is Nelson Mandela. Faith is Mother Teresa. It's not about having faith in something yet to come, which is in fact a lack of faith. It's showing that you're not coming from your center because you're projecting into the future. Faith is you when you are purely, wholly coming from conscious, active, present love, when you are your true essence. Faith is a baby, like Michael says, in the first 20 minutes of life. That's heaven, that's faith, that's the kingdom, that's the light, that's the essence. And that's our natural being. That's what faith meant, living from that, rather than living from the bushel baskets. It's almost an exact opposite of what it is today. People sometimes will ask me, you know, what is your faith? And then I'll say, well, you're going to have to define that word faith before I can answer that question, because I know what it actually meant in ancient times as opposed to what it is today, which is an ideology. And when you are addicted or unconscious with an ideology, it's a lack of faith, in fact, because you're not coming from the center of your being. And, of course, when you come from your center, You're coming from the center of everything, and that's what faith meant, not the ideology or something that you can possess, but rather it's who you are. You are faith.
Well, I'd like to throw a thought in here, too, and when you look at that, if you're coming from the content of your own dissociated mind, then that is what you're going to end up producing in your world. That's what's going to end up resulting in your life, as opposed to coming from the true center of your being. And there is, once again, where the whole forgiveness process comes in. There's a, you look in the, I believe it's in Matthew, where they give the parable of the unforgiving servant. And the Greek translation says, should you not also have had mercy on your fellow slave? You know, the story is this guy goes to his master and he says, I don't have the money. Will you forgive me my debt? And the master says, okay. And then the guy who's just been forgiven his debt turns around and he holds somebody else accountable for their debt. He won't give the same quarter that he's just been given. So it says, should you not have also shown mercy on your fellow slave in the same way that I had mercy on you? This is the master who let go of the debt. And then it goes on to say, and his master, moved in anger, handed him over to the torturers until he should repay everything that was owed to him. And then here's Yeshua saying, and my heavenly Father will also do the same to you if each of you does not forgive his brother from your heart. And, of course, in the Greek language, that's been kind of made to sound like a bleeding heart statement, forgive from your heart, rather than, and this is what I'd love for you to just kind of expound upon a little bit, Dale, is that word heart, meaning the container of what you hold within you that's other than your true being, your faith, and that becomes the director of the Creator producing the result in your life. It's not that God's going to, you know, in this parable, it's made to sound like, you know, the master moved in anger and so God's going to do that with you. But no, rather the Creator within has said, tell me what you want and I'll bring it to you. And if I hold hatred or some judgment about my brother, then until I forgive that, remove that from my own structure, not letting my brother off the hook, but move that, then the Creator becomes directed by that. You want to throw out some thoughts on that, Dale?
You know, you absolutely and completely, for lack of a better word, nailed it in the worksheet when you have the thoughts, well, the feelings, and then the thoughts connected to those feelings, because that word lebach would be my heart. That word leba, in Aramaic means it's the place where thought and feeling are entangled, where the thoughts and the feelings, the place where, you know, and there's a beautiful realization to this is the word karma. Karma is an interesting word because here in the West, karma has become basically your actions. You do something and you experience something in return. The West is really great at monsterizing everything. They mess with, you know, what meditation actually means, all these different Eastern philosophies. Karma is not necessarily your actions. It's how you feel about them. It's how you think about them. That's the heart of the matter. It's the almost like the energetic imprint that's created in relation to thought and feeling. And of course, thought and feeling in an experience right now that I have is in direct relation to my hidden past, the thoughts and feelings that I've had that I've recorded into my system that goes back to when I was just a kid. And it's, of course, what sense does it make to live from the perceptions of a six-year-old child when, in fact, that's in a lot of cases what we're doing. So when you see, like you can be out with friends or something, not that I'm saying that any of us have ever done this ourselves, out to dinner with friends, and they're getting along so great, and then all of a sudden one of the couple will say just the right thing, and then all of a sudden the other one starts pouting, and it's almost like you're looking at a six-year-old, because in some ways you are looking at a six-year-old. That's the heart. When that heart gets resonated, it's the place where the thought and feeling come together. And, of course, he said, take care of the heart. He spoke of loving the Lord your God. I'll say that in the modern translations. To love that shining feminine essence of the one absolute being with all of your heart. Of course, that means to bring it all up into the light. From the Gospel of Thomas, Yeshua said, that which you bring forth from within will save you. That which you do not bring forth from within you will destroy you. And that's the essence of the whole thing. And essence, of course, is that word Adam, which means red clay, red earth, blood, juice, wine, sap, or essence. Interesting. In other words, Adam is the essence of God. But it's what we're feeling in terms of our thoughts. That's what makes us naked in the garden and ashamed. That's what the block is, the veil that gets created, the pain body, the ape, the hypocrite, the ego, whatever you want to call it. It's the edging God out of the garden. And that's what the heart is. It's, I tell people, look, I'll ask a question in my events, and I'll ask something, and people will start answering it. Okay, hold on a second. What I would love to have, and I'm not saying anything about what's actually come forth, except from this point on, I would love to hear what you really feel about what I just said, what you really think. And that's what I call the Cosmo quiz effect, which is like someone's doing a relationship quiz in Cosmopolitan magazine, and they're not, especially if they know somebody else will be reading it, they're not answering how their relationships, how they really think and feel about them. They answer them more about how they want to think and feel about them. And that's the difference between, you know, the outer perception and the actual heart. The heart is, what are you really thinking? What are you really feeling? And that's the beauty of the worksheets is, in the first couple, you'll get in touch with some neat things, you know, okay, well, that's nice. Sometimes you think it's a small little issue, and it's got these massive roots to it, like the mandrake in Harry Potter, this really cute plant, and you pull it out, and it's got these roots that if you hear the roots of the mandrake, they say they're fatal. And it's this amazing experience where you thought it was this little tiny thing, but it has these huge roots. It's got a really big heart to it. And, you know, that's, for me, that's one of the greatest realizations of looking at the Aramaic, or looking at the Jesus teachings, the Yeshua teachings in Aramaic, is you get clarification on things like that, that literally, simply, there's some clarification in Greek, but we still have to come back to the fact that, look, if it happened in that region that they say, it wouldn't have been spoken in Greek. So there's still some clarification in Greek, but you got to go to the earliest language you can get a hold of, no matter what it is. And if I eventually found some sort of incontrovertible proof that it wasn't Aramaic, it was actually, I don't know, Pig Latin or something, then I'd start investigating into the Pig Latin. But the thing is, when you hear it in Aramaic, it pops. You can feel it. You know that that's real. You know that that's the way to live it. And the heart's what's resonating in those cases. Yeah, it's actually a great question. It's a great piece of insight.
Yeah, and also the fact that we've been taught an incorrect meaning of words leads to monstrous results. You know, if we listen to Vladimir Lenin, he says the way to destroy a culture is to change the meaning of its words. And so when the word forgiveness was changed to something to do with letting somebody off the hook, instead of the removal of what doesn't belong in your heart so that you don't get delivered to the judge, so that it doesn't play out in your life, so many people with that monstrous mistranslation of the word forgive are sitting around saying, oh, God, forgive me, God, forgive me, God, forgive, God, let me off the hook, let me off the hook, let me off the hook. It's like, God doesn't need to let you off the hook. God never put you on the hook. If you put something into your structure of frequency and energy, then that becomes the director of the experience that you're going to have. And it isn't that the Creator has done that to you. It's the Creator is the actor that carries out all actions, and we were given the right of choice. We were given the right to originate mind energy and bring about results, and or we inherited mind energy from generations, and we become captive to that. We live in the desert, the unconscious of that, and hoping God will come along and fix it for us. Forgive me, God. Let me off the hook. As opposed to our part in the process. If I've got 1,000 generations of hate around a particular object of attention or situation, that object of attention or situation is going to show up in my life over and over and over and over again. That's how the energy system is set to work. That's how this resonant field is set to work. And when I recognize that process, then if I choose to forgive from my heart, remove that frequency, if I do my part, then the Creator will follow through and move that energy for me. If I've got 1,000 generations in there, and you know, we've talked about the Harvard research where 10,000 brain cells fire and you get to become conscious of 9 bits of data, a tiny, tiny fragment of what's actually going on inside. And so if I'm functioning out of this, what we could call the 9-bit mind, this little tiny fragment, can I reach in? Have I got the capacity to reach in and change 1,000 generations? I can't even scratch the surface of that. But if I do my part in it, which is the canceling of the goal and the invitation to Rukka to support me, then the Creator can move that energy in me that I've given permission to have moved. So that's where it speaks of, then your Father will forgive you if you do your part in the process. The super processor, as it were, the one who can move those masses of energies with your permission can move them. Otherwise, you've got choice. It's not going to go anywhere because it's your choice. You were given the right to engage in any sanity or insanity that you choose. And there is a mechanism, a tool for opening your heart, for opening the space for those changes to take place. And that's what we've worked to embody as accurately as possible from the first century Aramaic words into the reality management worksheet so that we can really, truly, as opposed to God letting us off the hook, rather the Creator who can move the masses of generational energies now has permission to move those energies in us and will remove them.
You know,
this thing of, you know, looking to be forgiven is, it's just, it's a total, it just puts us on a totally incorrect track and leaves us without the ability to do the original work.
I was going to say there's a beautiful insight in the Aramaic that Yeshua speaks, he uses two different words for altar. The first would be the madbaka. Madbaka is basically kind of like the little thing that you make in the physical realm and you whatever, slaughter an animal, that somehow slaughtering the creation of a one being that knows only itself, that is nothing other than pure peace, love, and presence, that somehow slaughtering part of its creation and giving it back to it somehow atones something, whatever. But that would be the madbaka. And he would say, look, you've got your madbaka, it's there. If you feel on some level that you need to do that and you know, do that whatever with the lamb, do what you need to do. But he's like, where it really has to happen is in the elata. Elata is the other word for altar. The ta, of course, genders it feminine. Now, of course, this would be, and you put it in, it's in your talks, but A-L-T-E-R, not altar as in physical altar, but the place where things are altered, the super processor. And it's amazing when you realize that everything he said was feminine, meaning everything he said was about perceptions, ways of being, ways of thinking. If he ever referenced masculine or physicality, he was saying, look, I see, I understand about this physical thing that you seem to think is outside of you, but in fact, take care of the heart, because that's where you need to come back to. And, yeah, it's funny, that word elata, you're not going to see it in any kind of a translation into almost any different language, but in Aramaic, it's very clear that one is a physical thing, and the other, the one that he focused on, was that space within consciousness where we breathe into it. Of course, breath was a word that was removed too. They turned it just into spirit. We breathe in, and through our conscious breath, our conscious presence in this moment, that's when she, which of course is what Rukha was called in the first century, she comes and she undoes the effects of our errors of and ways of being and thinking. And I love it what you call, you call her the super processor. There's nothing that you can take to the mother. There's nothing you can take to that feminine womb, that feminine essence within your consciousness that she can't undo. But, of course, if you're focused on a physical altar outside of yourself, you stymie the process because, again, you're focused on effects. You're focused on what Ernest Holmes would call conditions, some sort of thing out there when, in fact, there is no out there. It all happens within. And, again, like I said, I don't mean in the body. I mean those non-manifest places. Just that little bit of insight that people could understand that he wasn't talking about the same altar in all these places. It could really, that's why I'm so passionate about what I do. If you haven't noticed, I'm slightly passionate, because it really is, it's important for me that people see that all these different words are actually, in fact, one single word, or that there's actually several different words for something that in English is one single word. You know, it's important to me that people know these things. There's a lot of aha moments in it, and that's one of the great gifts for me, is to see something. It happened to me last weekend, actually, see something that I've seen 1,000 times, and all of a sudden, it's revelation. I've got the eyes that see and the ears to hear in that moment, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, there it is. I never saw it that way, and that's where the beauty lies, is in those little moments of awakening, which happen now when we're present in the moment.
Well, and just to reinforce that, where Yeshua talks about, you who having ears do not hear, you who having eyes do not see. You know, he's not talking about physical eyes and ears. He's talking about those who have the brain cells. And when we move out of the Aramaic to the Greek, I mean, at least half of it disappears. And then you look at how many people want to control others, and so they've changed and changed and changed and changed the meanings of words. There's such a list of words. I mean, you look at it, you look at one as simple as the standard saying in our culture, and we still use this term because we were brought up with it. It's part of our language, but we oftentimes shift it as well. But you just look at the words, I love you. And the definition of the word's been changed. It's like it's become something that we do to each other. And, you know, many parents send their child out to find somebody to love them. The culture says you've got to find somebody to love you. And the truth is, nobody's ever going to love you, because love isn't a verb. It's not something we do to each other. It's what we are. And, you know, the kids a few years ago had that song, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places, because we've had the definition of the word changed. And it just, you know, you can't have the eyes to see and the ears to hear the original meaning of the words if the definition of the words have been changed. And so much of it, you know, just those two words. Take those two, and you've got the root of the destruction of the whole culture, the insanity that's going on. You've got people who think forgiveness is, I'm going to let you off the hook. And so they let somebody off the hook, and they leave intact inside themselves in their own hearts whatever their hatred or fear is, and they get delivered to the judge. The hatred and fear plays out again and again. And then, because they've been taught to hate themselves, they're looking for somebody to love them instead of looking to go back to their essence, the center of their being, their faith, their truth, and live as created human beings. It's just, it's like the journey's been put in such a backward direction, and so much terror has been instilled in people with these incorrect definitions. It's just, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and that's right. I believe it's so, I'm not so sure that this would have unfolded as beautifully as it has, especially with for me, just in the past 10 years or so that I've been doing it more publicly. I don't think that if it was back in, say, the 50s, that it would have unfolded quite as well, because a lot of those ideological structures were still pretty intensely set in place. And the beauty of it is that I probably have said it on here before, that people ask me all the time, if you could live at any point in time, when would it be? Would it be around Jesus? I'm like, heck no, it would be right here, right now. I can't imagine being in any more amazing, exciting time in human history. It's all about right now. And that's the most beautiful thing to me, is when I see the younger ones coming up and they're like, and I've said it to you, it's like, they're like, hold on a second, before you say a word, I don't really know anything about you, but I heard what you do. I'm putting my hand up to say, I don't want any of the crap. I don't want the ideology. I don't want any of the junk. Just tell me what's written on the page. Tell me what's there, and I'll figure it out. You know, and I'll sort of pull it into myself. And, of course, there's a little bit of a defense there, but it's beautiful in a way, too, because I could just say, look, this is modern understandings, which usually are from they're from 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th century English, European ideas. They have nothing to do with the original Jesus teachings. This is what the modern interpretation is. This is what it means in Greek. This is what it means in Aramaic. And you can just lay all three in front of someone, and they go, oh, okay. You can feel that original language. You can feel that original Aramaic. Sometimes you can get some nice things in Greek, but the slightest difference changes it. That's what's amazing about it is as soon as something goes into another language, regardless of intentions, it's going to be different. And that's why I'm telling people all the time, you know, the hardest word to get from Aramaic into English is actually the word word in Aramaic, what was translated into English. And I'm like, if we can't get the word word in accurately, if I can write 5 pages of definitions that are all aspects of the word word, milta, but none of them are the actual and actual translation, so that most translators just leave the word milta there saying, well, you know, we can give you aspects, but not the whole thing. That should tell you, much like the world, that our interpretation of the world will never be that direct, conscious, active, present experience of the world. In fact, we've got to go back to the original. You have to go back to the center, which was what it meant to be born again. Born again, the mandrish mean drish, drash, resh, resh means head of. You got to go back to the beginning, back before anything manifest happened, back before all of the supposed physicality, all of our concepts and ideologies were born. Come back to the center of your being. When you live from that, that's what faith means. When you live from that, rachma, chum means center womb, center of being, the inner womb. Rachma, love, when you love, you're coming from the center. And it's funny, it all takes you back to the center. Elata, that altar, A-L-T-E-R, rather than A-R, center. It's all about coming from that center. And he said it so clearly in the Gospel of Thomas. He said, blessed is the one who takes their place in the beginning, for they will know the end and they will not taste death. Because all death happens in the mask, in the ego. It happens in the pain body. It happens in the ape. And when you take your focus off of that mask and back onto that true nature of being, you're not addicted to the results. You're not addicted to the physicality and the details. And you realize that you're literally creating your life. Literal. And now science is even confirming that. So I just can't imagine being in a more exciting time in human history.
I agree with that. And, you know, it's interesting. A couple of years ago, Jeannie and I went into there was a rather large church in Bristol, Tennessee, and we talked to them a little bit about the forgiveness process. And, you know, we were proposing a workshop series. And they said, well, leave us a copy of your book and we'll look at it. And so it amazes me because this group of, and there, I don't know how many pastors there are in this church, it's a large church, and it amazes me that they had no recognition whatsoever for Yeshua's teachings. And all they could focus on, and it's like, you know, each one will know their own. And as they read my book, they're like, well, you don't use the word Jesus. I said, well, yeah, I purposely wrote this book for a secular audience so that we could show the truth of what he was teaching to people. And it's like, well, you know, then this is no use here. It's like they had no recognition whatsoever.
Wow.
Of the man that they sang about and praised about and did all this stuff. No recognition whatsoever of his teaching. And it's like, if you were actually following Yeshua, you'd go, wow, he's written all over every page here. His name isn't there. But, you know, it's like the solution has been made the problem in this culture. So, you know, as opposed to focusing on a word, it's like, here's what the man taught. You know, I love to talk about Apostles' Creed, where we take two phenomenological events. We have born of the Virgin Mary, comma, suffered and died under Pontius Pilate. And when you look at that statement of faith, his whole life and teaching is compressed into a comma. It's been disappeared. And those who claim to be his own do not know him, do not recognize him. They only know a word, a name, and it's not even his name. I actually sent you an email this morning from a website that's got a whole, you know, set of quotes and such about Yeshua's real name and what Jesus means. And it's like, unless that word is there and it's not even his name, they don't have any recognition of his teaching because they're not engaging in his teaching. They're engaging in some Greek philosophy that's been put in their mouths to replace how Yeshua taught them to get out of the hole. And so here they are, raging in hostility and fear, oh, doing all kinds of sweet and words about love. But when the stress is up and the chips are down, look at the rage and the fear. And there's no recognition whatsoever of his actual work. And I just find that kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I think
no eyes to see, no ears to hear.
I was going to say, if there's any challenge to letting the people that are, that may feel that they're sort of stuck in that, in an orthodox structure and looking for something more, in speaking with Marcus the other day, I was like, if there's any challenge, I need to let go of that word challenge in that case. But what's going to stay most important is that at every step of the way, in every present moment, we're holding love conscious, active, and present. So that, because that's what it is a lot of these people, they almost won't allow themselves to look outside of that fence because they think that that fence is life. They think that that framework, that ideology, that is somehow where their safety lies. And in fact, if there's anything about what Yeshua was saying, he was saying, look, you've got to drop it all. He was like, drop everything and come with me. I'm waiting for you in this very present moment. Yeah, and those words, unfortunately, were so mangled and misinterpreted that we have almost completely lost it. So I'm just now opening that file that you sent me. Cool.
I just saw it.
I haven't looked at my email yet.
I think that what has happened is that people have, inside that fence, have been terrorized into even talking to somebody about something that is outside the fence because they've been told that they are so woefully inadequate that they'll just get snared and caught, that they really have no intelligence, and you better let the preacher do your thinking for you. And, you know, if you look at how many of these preachers have been up there just railing on this and that, you know, on all kinds of different topics, and then you look and you find them in the back room and that's what they get caught doing, you better step outside that fence. You better wake up and start looking. But really, it's part of the brainwash and part of the control game is, well, anything that doesn't sound just exactly the way we sound, then it's bad and it's wrong, and you better watch it because it will ensnare you. And people are terrified to have a conversation that doesn't follow the exact words that they've been given, even though those words, like, for instance, the name Jesus, his name was Yeshua. If somebody isn't using that word, boy, they're in the wrong arena. Yeah. And people have it. It's like so many people are so provincial. They're so stuck in this little tiny postage stamp world that they've never looked for themselves at what's behind it all. They haven't been given the support or the capacity to look behind the curtain, you know, with the sorcerer behind the curtain. No, don't ever look behind the curtain. And it becomes a necessity to do that.
Oz, the great and powerful.
Yes, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Better look behind the curtain and, you know, question everything. Mm-hmm. But people have been trained to, through terror, to stay locked into a particular dogma or doctrine.
You know, I know we're down
and
to Jean the last couple.
And Jean tells me
of
that she does have a caller. If we've only got a minute or two, but maybe we could.
We do not have time to take the caller. We're down to a minute and 40 seconds.
Okay. Cool. Well,
I want to say
Dave.
This. Just I wanted to add something in real quick. I know we're down to the bone, but and I'm only going to make this announcement once. Audiences are being set up very quietly right now. I'm not going to name names now, and I'm not going to name names in the future unless they want their names revealed, with myself and some very, 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 very high-level evangelists, televangelists within Orthodox Christianity, not with me coming in threatening in any way, but saying, look, let me hear, encapsulize your view in a nutshell for me, and let me show you just what this Aramaic says, the Aramaic that, of course, in your Bible schools, they tell you doesn't exist, and it didn't start in Aramaic. It always started in Greek, etc. I just want to show you what's here on the page, some of the quotes that you hold near and dear, and let's see how both of them feel. And if this goes beyond this room, that's great. If it doesn't, I'm okay with that. So that's slowly starting to happen. I'm going to start seeing how
cool.
those communications
awesome.
Go. It's exciting.
All right, well, keep us posted. We're down to a few seconds. DaleAllenHoffman.com. You can get Dale's work. What's your YouTube channel name, Dale?
It's Spirit Into Sound. I'm the mystery guy on it's just – I think it's actually just Dale Allen Hoffman. I'm easy to Google. Just put Dale Aramaic. You'll find my YouTube. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Blessings. We appreciate you. Everybody, give the best gift you possibly can to the world. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.